Welcome to the LTAD Network podcast. I'm your host, Rob Anderson, and on this podcast, we seek out the world's best researchers, coaches, support staff, teachers, and athletes to better understand the process of long-term athlete development. Don't forget to get your 7-day free trial to our online platform and 50% off your first month with the code LTADVIP50. That's LTADVIP50 at the LTAD Network Hub website. This podcast episode is sponsored by Statera. Statera is a web-based application that helps youth athletes and their stakeholders estimate training load, track maturation status, monitor readiness, and manage injury. Put together by coaches working with busy youth athletes, Statera helps keep things simple and brings together the most important training information in one place to ensure that effective athlete-centered decisions can be made. No more complicated Excel tutorials and spreadsheets. Just upload your athlete's data and their training schedule and start to take control of their training commitments and workload. Make more informed decisions and protect your athlete's well-being, supporting their performance. Statera takes your data very seriously. GDPR compliant and registered with the ICO, choose from a range of maturation indices and validated measures, or customize your own. Statera can record any training variable and all your data is fully exportable. To reach out today and get a free walkthrough, head over to www.statera.uk. That's STATERA.UK. We're happy to announce our partnership with Einser Coaching, a company from Austria which offers educational talks, workshops, and conferences for sports scientists and coaches from all kinds of sports. Einser and the LTAD Network have teamed up for an annual youth development conference in Vienna, which will take place from the 21st to the 23rd of October for the very first time. James Baker, Mike Young, and Des Ryan will lead talks and workshops about topics like building the foundation of strength, power, speed, and agility, assessment of the biological maturation, load monitoring, and how to work best with stakeholders. For more details, check out www.eins-a-coaching.at or click on the link in our bio. Welcome to the LTAD Network podcast. In our final episode, speaking with Commonwealth Games athletes, I sit down with Noreen Ghulam. Noreen took part in her first weightlifting competition just 6 weeks after starting the sport, and she hasn't looked back since. Noreen began lifting in her GCSE PE lessons and soon developed a talent and love for the sport. In 2022, she was crowned British champion in the 49kg weight class and currently holds the British records for a 73kg snatch, 89kg clean and jerk, and a 161kg total in the 49kg class. This summer, she represented England at the 2022 Commonwealth Games. The 26-year-old has faced numerous ups and downs in her career through injury, but never fails to bounce back. Outside of her own sporting achievements, Noreen is a weightlifting coach and content creator. Welcome to the podcast, Noreen. It's been a long time, but it's great to connect with you again.
Hello. Yeah, no, it's been very, very good. I think we kind of go back probably from the beginning of my career, I guess. In weightlifting, I don't know how long have you been involved in the sport?
For off and on, probably since 2010 or ish, something like that.
Yeah, so very similar then. Very similar. Mine's the same. Like back end of 2020 was when I first got introduced to the sport. First was like Kazim came in for the first ever session, I think was literal back end of 2010. Yeah.
So what was, before weightlifting, were there any sports that you were involved in, or was weightlifting the first entry to the sporting world?
No. So I had no real sport, no real talent even. Like I used to get really upset that I never got picked for gifted and talented at school, even if it was just like for PE. But I was always that really annoying person that cared a lot about PE. And had to win, and was almost always doing the most during like sessions to win or make sure that my team was winning. So I just really enjoyed PE. So that's kind of how I fell into the sport. Was I was doing GCSE PE, and I didn't have a sport at all at the time, and I wasn't particularly good at like. So if you didn't have a sport, you do like a generalized thing, which was like a fitness test almost. And I wasn't very fit when it came to like running, because that was what they deemed as fitness and being fit at the time. So they kind of realized that I wasn't going to score very well at the fitness testing. And it just so happened to coincide with Kazim, who was my first ever weightlifting coach, wanting to get involved, get weightlifting involved in schools and stuff. So he approached the school, and the school were receptive to having him in to do a taster session. And then we realized that it was on the GCSE PE curriculum, so we could actually put the whole class on it. And it, because it was based on technique quite heavily, I think they thought that we could get really good grades within GCSE. So that's how I fell into the sport of weightlifting. But before that, there was nothing really. There was just PE, someone who really enjoyed PE.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, I mean, now, you know, it's good that the narrative for, you know, females and fitness has become around being strong, and, you know, CrossFit's got, you know, had a big part to play in that, changing perceptions of, you know, what sexy looks like, or, you know, like how it's cool to be strong now. But when you came into weightlifting, it was kind of before that, it wasn't cool yet.
It was not cool. It was not the thing anybody wanted to do. In fact, like, I'm not, like, I don't want to sound like I'm like shitting on powerlifter or anything, but everyone would be like, they would call weightlifting boring, and then they'd be like, but I'm a powerlifter. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. You have one more lift than us. Like, just because it's three lifts and not two, you can't call weightlifting more boring than powerlifting. Like, you literally sit down for 10 minutes between every set. Like, how is that more entertaining than weightlifting? But it was not sexy. It was probably the least sexiest sport out there at the time. And, you know, there wasn't very many females involved in the sport. And it was kind of, the perception around weightlifting was, if you did weightlifting, you were just a big female, because, you know, that whole narrative around mass moves mass. So it did attract back then quite a lot of heavier females. There were more heavier females than lightweight females involved in the sport. But having said that, that was still very few. That was probably like a handful. So yeah, definitely not a sexy sport. And it definitely wasn't until very recently as well. So it's actually bizarre to now like exist in a world where weightlifting is becoming cool, and everybody wants to know how to do it, and everybody's very intrigued, and everybody and it's great to see that more facilities are actually they've got barbells that spin, and they've got 15 kilo barbells, and they've got bumper plates, and they're trying to actually make it more accessible within everyday gyms, which is obviously great for us, because that means we don't have to travel to find somewhere that you can do weightlifting in, but also great for anybody who wants to take part in the sport.
So tell us about that journey. So you come across it in PE class, knowing the little competitive one who hasn't found her niche yet, and, you know, weightlifting comes along a bit interesting. What kept you coming back, and what kept you going into the next steps?
It's so obviously, like we just said, it being a very niche sport, there wasn't a lot of females involved. There wasn't a lot of lightweight females involved in sport at the time. So Kazim, my coach at the time, was very, very adamant in getting people competing. Said, like, loved getting us to competitions and enrolling us in loads of competitions. So straight out the bat, there was like 6 weeks of lifting, and it was like, okay, let's just enroll you into your first competition and get you going already. So I would win competitions because I would turn up and I would be like one of two people, or like the only person within that weight class. So I'd come back to school and I'd have like trophies, and I'd come back home and I'd have trophies, and it almost did feel quite good to be like, oh, okay, like I'm good at something. When good, you weren't really good, you were kind of like the only person taking part. But there was always that kind of, Kazim always installed in us that you could be really good, you could go and compete for GB, you could be the next best weightlifter, kind of always put in the back of our heads, if you train really hard, you can be someone in this sport. So I think it was more just almost like having that instant gratification from going to a competition and winning medals and trophies and coming back and having everyone be like, oh my god, this is so amazing. But also then you know, being installed in our heads that if we keep going, we could really become something in the sport.
Hmm. So obviously, you have Kazim as a coach when you're at school. Tell us about the transition to obviously moving on to university, because you move away from London down to Bournemouth. What was life like as a student athlete? Were you getting supported as part of the task side of things? What did that look like?
Yeah, so I was very, very fortunate at Bournemouth. I got a scholarship for weightlifting. So I got a bit of support with money and then support services. It was actually really, really good at Bournemouth University. If you are looking to go somewhere for uni that will support you in weightlifting, they definitely did, had a really good program there. But to be fair, the first 6 months, it wasn't really about training. It was about the normal student life. And I kind of, I was very lucky that I had people there that did weightlifting, because I think I would really struggle to actually continue on with the sport after that. But I was kind of coming off the back of a British Championships win. So in 2014, I won the British Champs in the 53 kilo class. And then I was kind of, summer had gone and I was coming into the uni, and I was very lucky that actually Stuart, I think you told Stu to drop me a message. So Stuart Martin at the time was a S&C coach at Bournemouth University, and he kind of had a bit of a club going with him and like I think a couple of the guys there. So it was very lucky that there was something already established within weightlifting and there was weightlifters there, because that meant that there was kind of a baseline of people to train with. But there wasn't that much of a club to begin with. It was just Stu teaching a couple of guys some, you know, the lifts. And then when I got like, look, we need a club, like I need to train with people, I need girls, I'm used to a team environment, let's like really try and make this happen. Because the first, and also like the first 6 months, I just was too busy doing what like normal students do, gained a load of weight, and then was like, oh god, I've got to get in shape for the English Championships, which is like in 6 weeks. And I came back after Christmas, and I think I was close to 62 kilos. And this is someone who walked around at like 55 for 53. So yeah, that was very eye-opening, to be honest, that first year of uni. But luckily I managed to get myself down, and I ended up winning the English, and that kind of then really started my student athlete career, because I was like, right, I can't do that again. Like that was fun, but I can't do that again. And then off the back of that was invited to squads to do the Golden Chance with British weightlifting. So at the time I was kind of one of the top 53s in the country, and they asked me if I wanted to join on this talent ID program that they were running, which at the end of it you could have there was a chance of being part of the funded program, so the world class program. And at the time I didn't enjoy the course I was doing at uni, so I kind of took it as an advantage to drop out of that course, go to this get on this program, and then potentially come back and do a different course when I was back over and be a funded athlete as well. So that was like my first year of uni. It kind of started off not really being about an athlete, and then ended off being I'm a full-time athlete training at, you know, in Loughborough with British weightlifting. And it was very intense. It was like 11 sessions a week. And actually, well, it was a 3 month long program, and about not even a month into it, I got injured. So it wasn't even doing weightlifting. It was doing like during a warm up. And I hit my wheel doing like jumping like in and out of lunges. I hit my back foot on a plate, and then my knee kind of caved in, and I ended up spraining my MCL. So the rest of the program, well, for 6 weeks of that program, I was basically out of training, and it was just all about kind of rehabbing back from that injury. And so we then had 4 weeks from literally I wasn't allowed to do anything on my knees to, okay, well, you can start picking back up with weightlifting. And there was 4 weeks until the British, and the British was going to be almost like the final decider. That's when you can hit qualifying totals and demonstrate to British weightlifting that you are good enough almost to be on the world-class program. And in those 4 weeks, I basically just threw it all to Warren and was like, all right, let's just go for it. And I didn't quite make the total that I wanted to make, but they kind of created a different total. So there's like the way the funding structure works, it's like A, B, C, D, E, and then it just goes down. So A is obviously the top level of funding. So I think we only had like, we didn't even have like A, B, C, we had like D, E, F, and they created like a G. So the G level was created for people who were like still up and coming and could progress on and still get to the, I think it was like Tokyo Olympics at the time. So they created this one and I hit that total. But then that total then required you to be in Loughborough, I think, for like 3 sessions a week. And at the time I was like, I didn't want to be in Loughborough. I wanted to go back to Bournemouth and I wanted to finish the degree. Like, so I wanted to go from a psychology degree to a sports psychology and coaching sciences degree. And I knew that if I stayed in Loughborough, yes, I'd get this funding, but the funding was like $4,000 for the year or something like that, $4,000 or $5,000 for the year. But like in Bournemouth, I was getting a scholarship and I was getting like massages every week and I was getting like, obviously I got my student loan and stuff. So in my head, I was like, do I want to stay here where it's Loughborough, and it's Loughborough pre like renovation. There was no Nando's. There was nothing there. And I'd have to have coaching from the coaches that I'd been having coaching from the last 3 months. And like back in Bournemouth, I loved the lifestyle there. I already had a coach there. I really wanted to do this degree. And I think I was getting like $2,000 from the uni as for weightlifting. So I was like weighing it out and I was like, it actually doesn't make sense for me to want to even be on this program. So I decided to just take myself out of the running after all of that and just go back to Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. That was the first year of being a student athlete, I guess, which took a turn. And yeah, I think it was a really, like, for me, I personally think it was a good decision. I don't regret not being on that world-class like funding program. Because like I said, I did have it really good at Bournemouth, and then we ended up developing like a really good club in Bournemouth that I think we won the Bucks like 3 times during my time there. So yeah, I don't regret it one bit. So yeah, that was that year of being a student athlete. But that wasn't really, I don't think, like a true representation of being a student athlete. It wasn't until after, I think. It is really easy to be an athlete and be a student, but at the same time, I guess I didn't struggle so much because my course was about sport as well, and I could really relate it to what I was doing. But also that's kind of, I think I would struggle the same way I did with psychology to try and do something that was so far removed from my sport, because I'm not really that much of an academic person. I'm more of like a, I always did quite well with like practical, and then during the coaching and during like assessments like for physiology and stuff like that I could directly kind of correlate to what I was doing, or so I'm not really that academic as a person. I did enjoy university. I thought it was good in the sense of I think I cared more about weightlifting than my degree anyways. So that probably didn't help the degree part, but helped in terms of stress, that I was never really that stressed about my degree, because I was like, stress is not good for weightlifting. So I was like, I'm just not going to stress about it and just get it done. But yeah, no, Bournemouth was a great part in my actual development as an athlete as well. So moving coaches from Kazim to Stu. So Kazim's got a very good technical knowledge, really good technical background, could teach anyone to lift and lift properly. And then backed by someone who was a really good, like, well, Stu's a great weightlifting coach now, but was a very, very good strength coach and S&C coach. And so pairing the two together, which I did for a bit, I'd run Kazim's weightlifting program and run a strength program from Stu. And it was also great after the whole MCL injury as well, because I tried to come back so quickly that I ended up developing tendinopathy in the opposite knee. And then basically going through years of just rehabbing or prehabbing tendinopathy and managing like quadriceps tendinopathy in both of my knees. And at one point that led to actually having edema on my kneecaps. And that then took me out of the sport for a little bit, which sucked because it's an overuse injury. It's a bit like you kind of just have to manage it. You can't just have a surgery and make it go away. Like, obviously it wasn't a trauma injury, which, you know, is good, but at the same time, it's like, it's just always going to be there. And you just need to make sure that you're managing your training load, which then is what we did. And we kind of put together a training program that accounts for it. And there's loads of stuff within the program now that almost prevents the tendinopathy from happening in the first place, because, you know, doing our posterior chain work, we're doing our, eccentrics and isometric work within like warm-ups. And so it was, yeah, very, very insightful, and also like very good decision not to stay in Loughborough, I think, and come back to Bournemouth in the end.
So you've touched on funding already. Like, funding and weightlifting is always an interesting conversation, because it's a conversation that has twists and turns over the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, when obviously, you know, the female athletes were the focus of a lot of funding, because that was identified as we could make a real dent in the kind of international scene here. And then obviously more recently with the, you know, weightlifting and the discussion around it being removed from the Olympics, it kind of seems to be like, you know, as an athlete, you're aiming for funding, but then they kind of change the goalposts a lot and things can change. So what's it been like for you since that initial, you know, delving into, okay, actually I'm going to go my own route here. What sort of level of funding and support have you received, you know, across the years since then?
From British, well, not British weightlifting, but like from UK sport, like I've never been on UK sport funding. So we kind of came off funding after Rio. So that was 2016. And then we didn't have any. And then leading up to Tokyo, they kind of, I think the girls who were going to Tokyo got some support for Tokyo. And then obviously we had this amazing result during Tokyo, and now we've been reinstated funding. So we actually have really good funding at the moment for, you know, the individuals that are on that funding bracket. And I think it's just the girls who went to Tokyo. So those who are aspiring to get on funding, it's like, at the moment, it's a pretty good gig. If you want to aspire to get there, it's really hard, because obviously, you know, I don't know how much the listeners know about weightlifting, but it's really hard to get to the Olympics in weightlifting. You can be a world champion, as we've seen in China, and still not make it to the Olympics. So that in itself is a challenge. But I've kind of, since that year in 2015, when I didn't get on the program, I just have not tried to. I've just gone, right, I'm just going to have a life almost outside of weightlifting and develop a career and do that alongside weightlifting. And then what I do is I coach, and my coaching pays for my weightlifting. So I kind of get weightlifting to pay for weightlifting, and then I have my career, which then funds my life. And that's like my life outside of weightlifting. And that's almost, I do look at them quite separately, and I try to look at them quite separately. And it almost just kind of helps justify the weight, like the costs of weightlifting. And, you know, because it's not cheap to buy a pair of weightlifting shoes. It's not cheap to, you know, I've got to really look after my body. So I tried to see a physio. Gym memberships in London aren't cheap. Physios in London aren't cheap. So I always do a bit of coaching on the side. So then I don't feel like I'm spending money on sport, and weightlifters can be quite resentful, but it's that one thing I don't need to almost resent, that like this sport is costing me a lot of money. So I just know that like the sport pays for itself. Obviously it's my time, but it's the time that it's me doing weightlifting that then pays for weightlifting. On a funding front, like, yeah, I just don't think it's worth it, because I also think that as soon as you go on to, you get on funding, your job is to lift. Anything and everything you do should be about weightlifting then, and almost other people kind of decide and dictate what your journey looks like in a way for you. And I guess it depends on the system, but that generally is the way that it goes, is that, you know, you're a funded athlete, you now kind of almost do as you're told. If they want you to be in Loughborough, you come to Loughborough. If they want you to go to a certain competition, you go to a certain competition. So I don't know if this is just a way of me justifying the fact that I'm not on funding to myself, but it's like, I can have my own journey and my own experience in weightlifting, and it's not tied down to what other people want me to do. It's tied down to what my goals and my aspirations are. And that's then down to me to kind of facilitate myself to be in a position to then go to international competitions. I think the only struggle is then when you've got to pay for the international competitions, which I've had to do on a couple of occasions, because they're expensive. And I was very lucky that they kind of fell along the same time that I was at uni and I was getting that funding. So that was, you know, paying for the World Uni Games. So that was, you know, £1,700, and then paying for the Worlds in Thailand, that was like another £1,800. So I was so lucky that I had that support from my university at the time to make up that money. So it wasn't actually coming out of my pocket when it came to those. So it's quite good that we have funding now, because that means, like, for example, Europeans was paid for, and like if I was to be selected for a competition by British Weightlifting, it would be funded. So in that sense, that does help me out, because I haven't got 10k a year if I want to go to 5 international competitions. And also, like, we don't decide what it costs and we don't decide where we go. So in that sense, it's been great, because that means that, you know, we can kind of piggyback off the success of the likes of Emily and the girls on the program, because there's more money for the rest of the people on the program to kind of go to international competitions. So yeah, it's like, I don't know if that's an interesting take or an interesting view on it, but in some ways it's great because I don't have to pay for internationals. And in other ways, I'm like, well, it is a goal that is not that I think is unrealistic, but I'm like, I would have to work really hard. And I'm like, for what? I don't really see I don't see it making a massive impact in my life, because I actually quite like having a career and I like working alongside my training.
So let's talk about probably the biggest competition, I guess, to you for date, you know, the Commonwealth Games, home games as well. What did the beginning of that journey look like in terms of the qualification, to the point where you realized, okay, I've made the cut, I'm going to stepping on the platform at Birmingham? Talk me through the start to end of that journey and some of the emotions and some of the experiences you're having.
So the way the qualification works is it actually does start about 18 months before the competition, but it was a little bit different for Team England, because we'd obviously already qualified a whole team, but Team England wasn't going to take a whole team. They weren't going to take just one person every category, even though they could. They were going to take, you know, the most competitive team. They wanted to go out there, and we were kind of on a mission to perform and to win medals, I guess. But I feel like my journey to the Commonwealth Games started, you know, before even the last Commonwealth Games, when I was trying to qualify for Gold Coast in 2018. And that whole situation from, you know, trying to go at 53, realizing that talent was too strong at 53, and then making a last minute decision to cut down to 48, which is a weight class that I'd never been in before. And that also doing that, you know, at the World Uni Games, which was in Taiwan. I'd like never been to that part of the country, traveled that far before, that not the country, the world, and traveled that far. And I'd never been to that weight class before. And I gave myself 4 weeks to do it in like 6 kilos. And, you know, it was my first ever world stage and multi-sport event. So it's quite a lot of pressure on this one event. And if I didn't do it at that competition, I was not going to be eligible and I couldn't qualify. So I did really well at that competition, and the next one was the complete polar opposite, and I had a shitter and I actually bombed out, and as a consequence, well, I bombed out, and then my competitor did really, really well and had the best day ever and got 6 out of 6 and, you know, PB'd her lifts by 10 kilos. So it was a bit of controversy around that whole last minute competition. So obviously this is a long time ago now, 5 years. So not a lot of people know. Some people might have even been part of the sport before. But the competition where we had the final qualifier wasn't actually a competition that could get you on the rankings. So anybody who did anything at that competition, technically, their results at this competition didn't count towards the rankings, but Team England still held this competition as a last minute qualifier as an internal thing. So there was a bit of controversy around whether any of that should have been allowed to happen, because there were quite a lot of people who were, let's say, third on the list that ended up then going because they did really well at that one competition. So I don't know how Team England kind of got away with it, but they had to reject my invite, reject the next person's invite, and then accept the third person's invite, because, well, in theory, that person had done the most during the qualification period, but it wasn't at an event that should have qualified them to do so. So there's a few incidents like that where some individuals kind of, they got a last minute lifeline, and some of them did really well. And obviously the girl that I was competing against did really well at that point. And that for me was heartbreaking, kind of, because 2014, I went to Glasgow and watched the games, and I was I really want to go to a Commonwealth Games. So I'd been working from 2014 to get to the 2018 games. At the last second, been kind of knocked out of the running of going to the 2018 games. And then that's when I then was right, there's no way that I'm letting myself feel like this again. I'm going to get to the next game. So every single kind of day after that was, everything and anything that we do now is kind of going to get us to the games. So it started way back before even quite a lot of people who even went to the games, some of them didn't even know about sport, or weren't taking part, or didn't even have, aspirations of the Commonwealth Games in their minds at that point. But so it was kind of a long 4 years, because then we had COVID as well in the mix, which in my story was a blessing, because I got furloughed, which meant that I had a lot of time. And then I was very fortunate to be living somewhere where I had a garage gym. So I basically started living a full-time athlete, and there was no other responsibilities because we couldn't do anything. So, I'd eat, sleep, train, and that was literally it. So made a lot of gains during that time.
I might think of you training in a garden shed, right?
At some points I was in a garage, and then I moved to a shed.
The
only kind of limitations was space there, and I didn't snatch massive amounts in my shed because I was scared to death. I think if I hit 65 in the shed, that was a very, very good day. But so we were meant to start a qualification process about 18 months out, but there was no competitions. We couldn't go to competitions. And then we'd been told that we could go to a competition. And I think this was, the British in 2021, maybe last year's British. So last year's British, which went ahead behind closed doors. So this was specifically for people to qualify for Worlds and for the Commonwealth Championships. So this was summer 2021. Just before this British, I was away with work, and I did a trail run with work, and I woke up the next day and I couldn't bend my leg. I couldn't bend my knee. I had very swollen fat pad in my knee. So what happened was, obviously, all this rocky surfaces that we were running across irritated my fat pad in my knee. That swelled up. That swelled up, and that basically put me out for a long time, because I couldn't even bend it enough to get up the stairs without it being in pain. So the first qualification, which was that was actually a qualification event as well, so that event could put you on the rankings. So I had to sit out of that event, and which meant that I was in a tricky position, because that was during COVID. We didn't have very many chances of actually putting our name on the list to get on the ranking. So obviously we qualified, like Team England had a whole team, but you had to put yourself on the roster. So you had to do a qualification event to get on the rankings. And then obviously you can be selected from that. So that was one out of, it was meant to be three opportunities down. So didn't have a total at the British. Because I was injured, I was allowed extenuating circumstances to do a qualification comp at a catch weight for the Commonwealth Championships. So I did this in September. So I rehabbed my knee for the best part of like 6 to 8 weeks. And then I managed to get myself in shape for the September competition, which was the Emily Godby competition. And I hit the total, qualified myself for the Commonwealth Championships. This was great. So we had all this time for the Commonwealth Championships. So it's September, the Commonwealth Championships is in December. At this point, I've got a really, really stressful month at work. So training just kind of takes a back seat. And I had a really stressful kind of 6 weeks at work. And it gets to a point where I'm like, okay, I'm 8 weeks out of the Commonwealth Champs and I'm weighing 57 kilos. And I got to be 49. So at this point, I'm like, okay, I need help. I'm struggling to do this on my own. So I get a nutritionist and we work to get myself down for this competition. And I'm not going to lie to you, it was one of the hardest things, having to work. And my job required me at the time to be out and about quite a lot, go up and down the country. I'm very regularly like away from home. So prepping your meals, making sure that you've got everything that you need, training, and being in like a really heavy deficit during winter was not easy. We get to about a week out flying to it was the World Championships combined with the Commonwealth Championships. And this is when there's a new coronavirus strain that comes out. And then all of a sudden countries start backing out of these Commonwealth Championships because it came from Africa. So obviously the Commonwealth has quite a lot of African nations. So there is like umming and ahhing about whether the Commonwealth Champs is even going to go ahead. And then we get told that the Commonwealth's going to be cancelled. So we pull out. So Team England then pull out of this competition. And at this point, I've been like cutting really hard to make it to 49. I have only got two opportunities left to get myself on the rankings. And I've just been told that one of them has gone. So this then leaves me with one final last chance to qualify for the games. And obviously, it's not so bad for my cut because it means I've got longer to cut down. But at this point, I'd made it to about 51 and I was only a week out. So I'd done quite a lot of the legwork to getting down to a weight where then, you know, then it's just like water and fiber manipulation and all those sorts of things. So I head into the British Champs knowing that this is literally do or die. Like if I bomb out here, I am not going to the games. Like I can't, like we've gone from, we were going to have multiple opportunities throughout the 18 months to just three opportunities because of COVID to then just two opportunities and then just one opportunity. So it was quite a high pressure situation for me at this point as well. I decided that I'm going to quit my job because I was like, I cannot continue to do this, to cut to 49 and to be out and about. And because it was like really taking a toll on my lifting at this point, with the whole eating and working and training. And I could feel that it was at a detriment to my lifting at this point. And I was like, right, I have this goal of going to the Commonwealth Games. If I really want to achieve that and do it well, because I was like, well, I can't just go now. Like I want to go and I want a medal because my opportunity to debut, that's gone, that missed out on that. So now this time it's I have to go and I have to perform. And that's what I thought in my head. So I quit my job because I was like, I'm going to just go full-time athlete kind of lead, and I'm going to just work enough to live and train, and that's it. So get to the British and thank God, do not bomb. So get myself on the rankings then. But again, I did really well at that competition, which was great. But at this point, so the girl that beat me last time, she's making a comeback from pregnancy. And then there's another girl in the mix who is a really, really strong girl, like lots of potential to do really well and to potentially like knock me off the list. So there is another internal qualification by Team England. So that wasn't sort of enough. So that put me on the rankings, but this last qualification, if someone had beaten my total, that was it, that person was going to go. So it was like, there was a final qualifier, whoever lifts the most in the time gets to go. So in my head, I was like, I've qualified, and I was a fair decent, like a decent amount ahead of all these girls. But I was like, in my head, I was like, last time I got knocked out the last second, I don't think I can really leave it to chance here. And, you know, leave the kind of door open for someone else to just walk through. So it was a bit annoying because I had to pick between cutting for that competition and cutting for the Europeans, which was kind of shortly after that competition, or shortly before the competition. But yeah, so I basically had to pick between them. I was like, do I cut for that or do I cut for the Europeans? And I decided to cut for that because I was like, I don't want to give anyone the opportunity to kind of take it from me last second. And that was probably one of the the most nervous I've ever been, because it was almost like flashbacks to the last time I was in this situation and it went so badly. And not only was, you know, I had that kind of lulling over me, there was it was at Uxbridge at Brunel. So it was, I had quite a lot of family there, and it was like the first time that my dad had ever come to watch me lift as well. And the morning of, I woke up a kilo over weight. So I woke up a kilo overweight. So I had to shed a kilo in literally like a couple of hours. And it took like, so I was staying at a hotel, but the hotel was useless. It didn't have a bath. It didn't have like the shower wasn't even getting hot. So I actually called my dad and I said, get a hot bath running right now. So I went from the hotel near Heathrow to my house, which is luckily down the road from Brunel, went for a couple of runs in the bath. So it was like 15 minutes in like scorching hot water, like basically was burning myself. Managed to get down like 0.6. Then luckily there is there's a sauna in the hotel at the campus at Brunel. So I was like, I'm just going to go there, weigh in on the official scale, see what I'm at, and then go from there. So I get back to there and it's like I still got like 0.3 or 4 to go. Run to the sauna. So I'm in the sauna. I get to the sauna, I'm like having a nosebleed on the way back. So I'm in the sauna, and this point we're eating into my weigh-in time. So 9 o'clock weigh-in, I'm eating into it. I'm trying to shed this last like 0.3, doing just rounds in the sauna of like 10 minutes on my own. And I'm just thinking, my dad's going to come watch me lift and I'm not even going to make it to the platform. Like it's in such a bad way. Was contemplating all my life decisions, was like, do I even bother? Because, you know, technically don't have to do this event. And when you're so deprived and you're sitting in a sauna and you're on your own, and you, like, I didn't even prepare to be in the sauna. So I didn't even bring like appropriate attire for the sauna. I just had to sit there in like a towel. So I run from the sauna to the weigh-in. And during that time, I'm then having a nosebleed, obviously, as if anything else couldn't go wrong at this point. But thank God I made weight. So if weigh-in, so you know this, but like weigh-in starts at 9, but the competition starts 2 hours after weigh-in. So if you eat into your weigh-in times, if you don't weigh in on time, like as soon as like the first call, then you've only got an hour until you start lifting. So I think I'd eaten in like 45 minutes into this time at this point. And I just remember I was in such a bad way. Stu, my coach, came up to me and was like, you're right. And I just kind of looked at him and like, I just, in my head, I was thinking, am I okay? Is that even like, no, it's like, I'm not, I just need to be left alone. And I basically just said to him, no, you just need to go away. I just need to be left alone right now. And I need to eat and I need to drink some water. So that kind of threw me, because obviously wasn't expecting to have to lose a kilo morning of, and just did everything I could to rehydrate. And I actually ended up having the best competition. One of the best competitions ever, really. So I think I snatched 71 that day, and clean jerked 89. So I think I don't know if it was, they're both British records. I think they're both British records, and obviously then led to a British record total. So that was then when I kind of solidified my ticket to the game. So it was, that I think was quite special, because it was like hometown where I started lifting, like in front of my family and my friends. Although like the competition itself wasn't, like, I didn't really mean, so I kind of weigh out, because I looked at the stats from the Europeans. If I'd actually weighed in at what Europeans, it was a very good chance. I think the bronze medal was 163. So my total that time was 160. So I was like, okay, that's like super close. Like, I could have been in for a European medal this year. But instead I chose that competition to be the 49 competition. But almost in hindsight, like, I know you do sport for yourself in a way, and it, as much as it would have been great to do that, like, that was in Albania, where, you know, my dad wouldn't have been out there, my cousins, my family wouldn't have been out there to see me lift. So it was almost like it was a trade-off that actually in hindsight almost I don't mind, because I think having my friends and family witness me lifting so well as well, it's like that. I think when you go 6 out of 6, and that for PBs as well, it's almost like the stars have aligned for you after, you know, such a tragic morning of having to lose weight, that that's almost like, that's one of those anomaly competition days where people don't tend to have them very often. If people are going 6 out of 6 all the time, you think they're not going heavy enough. I think that's usually what's said. So that in itself, that was a really, really good weekend. That was like, I couldn't really have asked myself for anything more than, you know, 6 for 6 to get to the games, British records.
I remember watching, and obviously you could tell you were happy, but now knowing the backstory of the 24 hours before, I could see why, you know, there was that extra level of intensity to how happy you were with the performance.
I know. It's like, you know, I've been lifting now, so it's come into my 12th year of lifting, and I think I've gone 6 for 6 maybe. I think that was maybe the third ever time going 6 for 6 in a competition. So it's like a big deal to go 6 out of 6 as someone who, like, I always kind of do push myself in competition. I'm not someone who tends to open really light and to be like, okay, we'll just kind of go how we feel and just be in her comfort zone. Like, I do like to push myself out of my comfort zone during competitions. And because historically I've been a competition lifter, and I think there was a big lull period of time, especially going down to 49, 48, and then 9, where I struggled to back myself to be that competition lifter, and I ended up being someone who lifted more in the gym, or who was capable of doing sort of, you know, the same in competition that I did in the gym. Whereas before it'd be like, okay, if I was lifting 75 kilos on the regs, I'd open at 80 and it'd be fine. So I didn't really have to do the heavy lifts in the gym to prove to myself that I could do it on the platform. Whereas I kind of grew to be someone who was more like, no, if I don't hit 70 every single week, like, there's no way I could possibly hit it on the platform. So it kind of, self-doubt really started to creep in during those days. I think it was like, well, especially after bombing out at, you know, probably one of the most important qualifying competitions that I'd had to do, like, today. Like, I think that really did knock my confidence in, like, being able to go for it during, like, in competitions, because I, you know, had loads of then opportunity after that. So even after that happened, I got selected for European under 23, so I got to go to that. And then I got, during the time of the games, because they were in April, when historically they're in the summer, but when in Gold Coast they happened during April, there was the same time as the Europeans, so I got selected for Europeans. so I got opportunities to go to international competitions, you know, during that time. But yeah, there was just something about, I think, that competition that really started to knock my confidence. And it's not until recently that I'd got that back. But yeah, it was great to then go to the Europeans and have the Europeans this year, and have that kind of run through on an international platform, because I'd been out of international lifting since 2019, so September 2019, and then we're 2022 now. So been out of practice, and I'd only done two competitions, three competitions between, you know, 2019 and beginning of 2020 and 2022. Because of COVID and the lack of competitions, like in real life. So we got the opportunity to go and do that, which was great. And then we kind of headed into the game. So I left my full-time job, and I was just going to do a bit of coaching and just kind of get by. But then I had the opportunity to, I got approached by Virus International. So I got approached by them. So I ended up doing some contracted work for them during that time. So I was working part-time. I didn't end up being a full-time athlete during that time anyways. So I worked part-time, and then I trained, and I ended up moving to Loughborough for 3 months heading into the games. So I was living in London before that, which was fine. But I think the issue with London is it's so big and everyone's so spread out that you kind of don't end up having, unless I specifically moved, let's say, to Dartford and trained at Europa, anywhere that you go is quite there's a commute in somewhere. So going to Loughborough meant that I could literally walk to the gym in about 20 minutes. I had Chris and Holly, who I lived with, both going to the games. So it was, you know, the three of us, we had very similar goals. And you know, everything was just aligned to the games. Whereas before, I was living on my own. It was very sad and almost a bit depressing. And I'd go and train, and I kind of would train on my own most of the time, or I'd commute into the city. So it was great to go to Loughborough and to train with Holly, because we have like similar top end numbers. So when my numbers is a 55, kind of the same as hers. She's a 71 lifter, but my 49 numbers are maybe a little bit less, but that's like 5 kilos between us. So it made it great, because we could almost like push each other a bit. I always tried to keep up with what she was doing. And then, you know, great to have a training little group that, you know, we held each other accountable to what we were doing, our goals, and everything that we did facilitated, you know, our performances at the games, which was just great to have, I think, as an experience leading up. So it was like a training camp before the training camp, because we also were very lucky to have a holding camp in Nottingham, where we trained for about 10 days together with the rest of the team before heading into the village. So that was great. So we got like, obviously the coach, you got to get used to the coaching team. We had obviously physio. So Liam, who's our physio, is great, helping us out and making sure that we were in top shape. And it was almost like, okay, like literally everything now revolves around weightlifting in the Commonwealth Games and preparing for, you know, for some of us being on the biggest stage that we'd ever been on. And being host nation and home nation really does come with its perks. Like it was just unbelievable, like how well we were treated throughout the whole process. You get like, everything's just nicer. You get more kit, you get better kit, you it was very strange. Like when we were in the village, and especially, so there was times where, let's say we were going to the opening ceremony, we had all of the volunteers, and because it was like multiple, like there was obviously so many volunteers, because we then had multiple locations, but we'd walk out heading into the, you know, get the bus to go to the opening ceremony, and everyone's like cheering and clapping. And obviously because your team England, there's a real sense of like, oh my God, all of these people are here for us and for sport, which was just so nice. And I think, like, I don't know if you went to watch any of the lifting, but just this, the crowd and the arena, like I've never lifted in a setting like that. I know that it was quite similar during like Gold Coast, and you just don't get that turnout. Like even if you've got seats, I've been to venues where there's loads of seats, you know, I'm at internationals. It's a great stage. It's very grand. There's loads of seats. There's not very many people in those seats usually. So to have an arena that's pretty much packed out, I did win the luck of the draw when it came to like time. So it was in the middle of the day on a Saturday. So it was a pretty packed stadium as well. So it was just amazing. Like I can't really compare it to anything else because I've not ever had that experience. But I think it's definitely something that an experience that I'm so glad that I kept going for. Like I am like quite glad that I throughout everything just kept going, because I think people, and there's been so many people, and you know we've both come from almost from weightlifting in a similar group at a similar time, and there's been so many people that have had really big aspirations in the sport, and you think like it is hard, it's not easy to keep going and to have a career alongside weightlifting, to be able to stay in one piece for that long, to survive, you know, training that long and not letting things get to you. But I think it almost like, I guess like with anything, it's like all of these experiences and all these setbacks, like they either tell you how much you don't want it, you don't need it, or they almost give you a sense of like, that's that kind of fuel to the fire where it's like, hey, you either want to keep going or you want to just quit altogether. And there's been so many times where I know individuals that we started off with that have just gone, now I'm going to chuck the towel in and continue on with life. And I'm so glad I didn't. Like, I'm so glad that I didn't, because it was worth it. It's so worth it.
So obviously there's the experience of being in the arena, in the games. What, in terms of your personal performance, reflecting back on that, happy with it?
Yeah, so I was very conflicted to begin with, because I'd missed two clean and jerks. So in my head, I was like that as a number. So snatch, I just went straight to like the negative. Let's go for snatch first, because that's a very positive experience. So I went 3 out of 3, snatched 73 for another British record. And I actually realized today that was 1.5 body weight, which has been one of my like personal goals, to be able to like snatch 1.5 body weight. And I didn't even know that until today that I'd done that. But so I was really, really happy with snatch, because at the last competition in Albania, when we were at the Europeans, I didn't have a great snatch experience. So I was at 55. So I had like, when I'm not having to cut, I almost have like bigger ass, like I'm like, okay, well, you know, my best snatch at 55 or around like weighing around that is like 78. So like, in my head, leaving having just snatched 70 is like, that's not a great day. So the fact that I kind of managed to use that experience, work on it, and you know, with the coaching team as well, like I think there was a bit of like communication around what I wanted to do in the back, but we like kind of fixed it. And then I had a great snatch experience, like doing, you know, 3 out of 3 British record. That was amazing. And then when it came into the clean and jerks, within the snatches, I was kind of high enough to be, I think, in around the mix, I think maybe 5th place or in around that. So in my head, like, and when we looked at the declared weights to begin with that everyone had put out there, there was a really good chance, you know, I was sitting around 5th or 6th on the on the rankings, but it was like, okay, you're still close enough that if you do it really well, you could potentially be in the mix for a medal. Because of this, we opened quite heavy for clean and jerk, and I was looking quite good for clean and jerk leading up. Like I was in a really good place. I was feeling really strong. So I opened at 88, and my best at 49 is 89. So opened at 88 and then went to 91. But between 88 and 91, there was a lot of waiting, like a lot of waiting around. And at this point, I get it quite a lot of the time, refueling. There's something about the refueling that I do post weigh-in. I was feeling really, really sick and things were going through me, and I just didn't feel like very comfortable lifting. I didn't want to like as soon as I like bent over to be in the start position for a clean, I literally just felt like I wanted to heave. I didn't want to wear my belt. So I was in a very uncomfortable position to begin with. And then on top of that, I'm waiting around for my lifts, which I'm not used to. And because I'm not in a great position in terms of like, I'm like physically not feeling great, I didn't want to do very many warm-ups. So I think I let that also get in my head a little bit in terms of, I'm like, oh, I've been waiting 10 minutes before going on. Like, can I even do this? Like, so this whole, it being like a whole ordeal, then I let get to my head, because I, like, looking back, there's no reason why I couldn't have done those numbers. I think it was sort of the fact that I didn't necessarily back myself, because the warm-up wasn't great, because I didn't feel like I was really in a groove. I wasn't feeling physically in a good condition. I hadn't lifted anything in like 10 minutes leading up. So I ended up missing 91. So I got it in a front rack, and I caught it too low, and I didn't catch the bounce at all. So I just didn't end up finishing the squat part of the clean. And then we had to make a decision whether we wanted to really stay in the mix and go up, or we wanted to redo 91. So I just said to Stu, like, you do it. Like, you just make the call, make the decision. And we ended up going up to 93. Which actually was a weight that I'd done 2 weeks prior in the prep. So again, there's no real reason why I couldn't have done it. There's no, like, it's not like I would have lost any muscle or lost any strength, but I just didn't have the confidence in that warm up. And I ended up not making the lift, which in the, like I said, in hindsight, I could have just done 91 and I probably would have placed the same. But we didn't know how it was going to pan out. So we just kind of was like, let's just push for it and just then see what else happens, because the girls then ended up hitting, around like 97, 96. So 93 wouldn't have been enough, but you never know. It could have put the pressure back on them. So it's a mix. I kind of was proud of myself for going out there. I was a kilo under my best and, you know, opening and still making it. And still, you know, giving the other two attempts, you know, giving them a good go. But I think I'm never really satisfied. I think quite a lot of lifters aren't like that. Like, you go, oh, you know, but I missed that or whatever it was. Like, unless you do 6 out of 6 and break British records, you go, right. In my head, I was like, oh, maybe I could have cleaned and jerked a little bit more of that competition. Because we took small jumps, but at the same time, you know, you could always do more. There's always, that's the issue with weightlifting, you could always lift more. Overall, I broke a British record in snatch and then again in the total. I am pleased with how I did. And I just think sometimes it's unfortunate, because when you looked at the stats, everyone's total, starting totals, everyone ended up lifting like 10, 15 kilos more than that. So we couldn't have even known that these girls were like hiding big lifts under their totals. Because when we looked at it at face value, their totals that they'd put down were not too far off of what we were. And what they had actually done in other competitions wasn't too far off of what I'd done on the day. But, you know, we didn't know that everyone was going to come and bring their absolute A game. But no, it was a good competition to be a part of, and I learned loads of it and loads from it, and I had a great time. So yeah, overall, very, very positive experience.
So you've done it, you've ticked the box now as a Commonwealth Games athlete. So what's next on the horizon for you? What have you got your eye on next? As you just said, you're never satisfied, so that gives me a hint that you've got some other plans, or what are you thinking?
Do you know what? It's very interesting, because it took almost my life and my soul to be 49 the past 8 months, that I was adamant. I was like, I don't know if I'll ever be 49 again. I might just, you know, leave it. You know, I've been to multiple European championships. I've been to a world championships. I've been to Commonwealth Games. You know, I don't think I've reached the limit of my physicality, of what I can achieve as a human. But I also think that I'm holding myself back quite a lot by cutting down to 49 constantly, and that I'm never going to reach my physical potential underfeeding myself constantly. But the issue I have there is that I, you know, obviously in a position now where I'm quite competitive as a 49 in the UK. And the talent at 55 is just a whole level above. You know, we're talking about, you know, girls that are capable of winning European medals, girls that are, you know, winning Commonwealth medals and in the mix for, you know, gold at Commonwealth. So the level really is like a big jump and a big step up. And, you know, I don't know what I'm, I know that I've done 7,800, but I know that I've also never really committed to 55 as a weight category and stay there for a prolonged period of time to really know what I'm capable at that body weight. But at the same time, you know, I would really struggle to say no to any opportunities that come my way. Yeah, so I don't know if I get presented with an opportunity, I don't think I could say no to it. Mm-hmm. Be 49 again. So there are still things that I want to go to. I've got down on my, like, I wrote a list of goals before back in 2020 of things that I wanted to do, and going to a World Championships was on the list of things that I wanted to do. So there's that, and there's, you know, potential for, I don't know, because it's a very interesting time now. 49, 59 are an Olympic weight category, so actually going up to 55 at this period of time might not be the worst, because maybe the girls at 55 at the moment are going to potentially do a bit of this, move down, move up, and which, you know, leaves room for other people to come through, and we might, I don't know if I'd get to be as good as, you know, the likes of Freya and Katrin, but at the same time, yeah, going up, I'll never know unless I do go up. So yeah, I guess for me now, it's quite hard because I've been involved in the sport so long that it's not novel anymore. It's actually quite hard to improve if I want to. But at the same time, so for example, right now, I've decided to take a step back from weightlifting and run a completely different program. So I got a program from someone who's a powerlifter, does a bit of calisthenics, does a bit of powerlifting, bodybuilding. So my program is like an amalgamation of a little bit of lifting to keep that skill in and to make sure that I can still snatch and clean jerk. Lots of bodybuilding, a bit of like calisthenics in there, and a bit of, you know, powerlifting style, squats, deadlifts, those sorts of things. And this is really to put myself in a position where I can get really strong faster. Because you get, like, you know, the three kind of fundamentals in weightlifting is strength, power, and technique. You know, I've kind of got the technique thing nailed down now, to the best of my capabilities and to my proportions. Power, I'm always working on. It's not something that I'm, you know, amazing at, but constantly working on power. But strength is probably my most limiting factor, in the sense that, like, I am a small individual, so I'm lifting weights that are quite a lot more than my body weight, and I do feel it, especially when I cut down, like the strength in my back, and I do feel like I get drawn forward quite a lot. And when my lifts go to shit, it's usually because I'm fatigued and I'm tired and I'm not strong enough to hold the positions, rather than the fact that, like, I've all of a sudden got poor technique that day. So I've switched up, and I'm pushing myself really out of my comfort zone with this type of training. You know, we're talking about 10 to 15 reps being an absolute regular, and this is of, like,
which is unheard of for weightlifters.
And everything is RPE 9, so it's like very hard, and it's kind of almost like flipping the switch. Like, I always do accessory work, but it's like going, instead of my accessory work being 20%, my weightlifting being 80%, it's going, there's 80% accessory work here and there's about 20% lifting. So I'm kind of thinking out the box now with, right, how do I get myself nice and strong and physically, call it like almost like bulletproof. I need a stronger core. I need all, like, because I'm not someone who builds muscle really fast. So, and obviously after 12 years in sport, you get quite fit for weightlifting. So just snatching and clean and jerking is not actually going to make me that much better at snatching. It's actually got to a point where doing weightlifting training, like, I don't even require that many calories to do like hard training because I'm like kind of so used to doing that training from doing it for so long, that yeah, this is different gravy. Mm. I've had to learn how to breathe during sets. thing I usually do. I used to think like, it's not that you shouldn't think about your breathing during weightlifting. Obviously, it can be quite helpful, but you know, when you're doing like a 15 rep tempo style set, like you've really got to think about, you can't hold your breath the whole time. You literally die. But yeah, pushing myself out of my comfort zone a little bit when it comes to strength and hoping that I can almost make the maximum amount of gains in the shortest space of time by really just grafting hard and being uncomfortable.
Where can people keep up to date with you in your new training escapades and new bits and pieces that you're going on? Where can people track you down on social media? You're pretty good at it.
I do try. I do love Instagram, not gonna lie. I do love being on Instagram and creating little videos and sharing about, you know, my weightlifting journey and helping as many people on Instagram. So it's basically just my name and with an extra N. So it's not actually spelt like that. So it's Noorin, N-O-O-R-I-N, and then an extra N. I think Noorin on its own was taken at the time. So yeah. You can keep up to date on my Instagram. I do have a TikTok, but I don't really post on it very often. I tried a bit when I was during like the games prep. I tried quite a bit because I had more time, but I do have a TikTok as well. And I think that's Noorin95. But yeah, Instagram is the main platform where I post about my daily struggles and my lifting, a little bit of my lifting. So yeah, make sure if you like to follow me, that'd be great.
Cool. Well, it's been awesome to catch up. I mean, obviously, you know, we've been following your career from afar in terms of when British champs come up and obviously, you know, willing you on at the game. So it's cool to touch base and get the backstory behind the whole qualification and everything else. So it's been really cool to dig into your journey. So thanks for sharing that with us tonight.
Oh, no worries. I'm like, I've kind of gone full, I feel like a bit of a weightlifting mum in the sense that I'm like, I'm so proud of where the sport is right now. And like, I actually have gone, you know, people this deep into the sport, like I hate it. I hate doing it. And I'm like, I'm the complete opposite. I love weightlifting. And I like love that people are now loving weightlifting as well. And that it's cool. And that there's like way more females getting involved than they once was. Cause I come from a generation where I used to tell girls to come and weightlift and they'd literally look at me and be like, are you joking? So for it to flip the switch and for it to become cool and sexy right now is, it's just great to see. So yeah, thank you for building a platform for people to almost tell their story and for inviting me on to share my story. But thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode. And don't forget to get your 7-day free trial to our online platform, as well as 50% off your first month with the code LTADVIP50. Don't forget, you can find us on Instagram using the account at LTADNetwork, as well as Twitter at LTADNetwork, and find our website www.ltadnetwork.com.